This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
I am here with the great Kara Swisher. I never usually do this. I'm going to start by showing the book, because for those of you who are watching, because it's like so Kara. The book, which by the time you listen to this, will be a runaway Times New York bestseller.
No, let's hope.
I'll put everything I know on it, because this is a book for our times, a tech love story. She's, of course, the host of the Pivot podcast with our good friend Scott Calloway. She's also the host of the podcast On with Kara Swisher. She can be seen all throughout CNN. Now, you're loving doing legacy media. I mean, I'm reading quotes about it. It's really interesting.
Here's why.
Miss Tech is like, wow, let me go to the prehistoric age and do some television.
I don't think it's prehistoric. I think it's, you know, reports of any of these deaths are greatly. If you have a global brand that's everywhere in the world, it's distributed. I got this idea from Barry Diller, actually. He's like, they're everywhere in the world on every TV. Why couldn't they then? You know, they've been slow to streaming and except made a few missteps, but it's a global brand. I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like there's a lot you could do with it. You just have to right size the business, right? You have to, that's all.
It's not going away. It's not going away.
So it's an opportunity, and I could test my little TV chops and get I haven't really done it.
I've been on TV with you. As a matter of fact, the last time we were on TV together, we were on a panel on Morning Joe. Well, that was Nicole. Then we were on when Musk was buying Twitter. I called him a Bond villain, and you were kind of like, well, let's just...
We don't know, but you're right.
Now we read in the book that maybe there is... You're coming along to the Bond villain theory.
I am coming along. I am there. I thought he could... Look, Donnie, he changed very drastically. Look, he always had those elements
him. You were as close to him as anybody who's not in his family, whatever. Right. Did you see a moment in time? I mean,
yes,
you talk
times.
About in the book how he went from... turned into a malevolent narcissist from a narcissist from a you kind of
he was it. Always in love with himself, like there was they're all like that. So I mean, maybe I'm a little bit, they're all like that, they kind of all are narcissists on some level. He was more interesting because of the companies, and maybe I did give him more credit. They still do the space stuff, the car stuff, real accomplishments. The Starlink thing, when he did that, I got it right away. Like, I was like, oh, wow, this is a big deal. Why is nobody doing this? Right kind of stuff. And you're dealing with a lot of people who are doing stupid things. You've seen them all. Like, digital dry cleaning services, digital, whatever. It was so dumb. Digital, I don't know, help you get your liquor delivered. It's fine, but it's not groundbreaking. And so when you see someone doing a number of really difficult to pull off stuff, even if he didn't invent Tesla, boy, did he really turbocharge it, right? Like that kind of stuff. And so you have to admire that. And so when you look, and Twitter had always sort of bumped along at the bottom, as you know, as a business and as an advertising business and as a stock, certainly it didn't go anywhere. And it had so much potential. Everyone really liked it and was using it. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of this disconnect between its usage. It wasn't that big. It just was its influence and its business. And so I thought, someone has to buy this and fix it, right? Like another, like a worldwide global network communication. Like right now, Jim Lanzone is doing pretty well with Yahoo. It's again, I wouldn't write any of these things off, and it's at the right price. And so I thought, okay, if I'd have made a list, he'd be on it. He'd be near the top of it. People who could do things with this business, and he had the money and the means and the interest because he loved Twitter, right? But what I didn't foresee, and I think, listen, he had elements of this. There were gender and racial issues at Tesla, but they were all over the tech industry. We'd written about them extensively at every place that had those issues, whether it was Google or Uber or anywhere else. And then, he was always quirky. Like he was always strange and quirky, but that, again, welcome to my world, quirky people. And so he shifted around that pedo tie thing when he told the cave diver people that he was a pedo. That was weird. I found that weird. I was like, why would you throw around a term like that?
Yeah.
And then he got mad because Biden didn't invite him to some car confab or whatever. And he shifted really quickly after that. And then COVID, something happened to him in COVID. Yeah. He got real testy about COVID and he started to say the government was sneaking around and vaccines. And he moved into that area. And a lot of people did. He wasn't the only one. And I think that was, to me, COVID was something happened.
It's kind of something happening. You talk in the book, there was a moment that really caught you when Trump invited all these guys for a photo op and you knew they all despised him and they were there in a very kind of toady fashion. And it was kind of a light bulb moment. And these fuckers don't give a shit about shit. And they don't. And first, before we get into that, give me the similarities between Trump and these guys.
You know, a lot. Some of them. I mean, look, at least you see Trump coming, right?
Trump never said, I'm here for community.
No, and, he doesn't.
Starting warm and fuzzy. Exactly.
No, he's not. He was a selfish prick from day one, I think from birth, and he's a selfish prick now. Yeah. He's just more malevolent, right? It's just increasing malevolence of his prickishness. I don't think he hid any of it. He wasn't the nice guy. He didn't do any of that thing. They sort of did this performative, we're here to save humanity stuff. Yeah. They did this. We're all in it together when they're the ones on the private planes and getting all the value out of everything. And so that's how they're different. I think they're now kind of I don't want to say the hood is off, but for some of them, the hood is off. And so you're actually seeing their actual face. And, you know, a lot, they're not everybody. I don't want to like, one of the
no,
things.
No, look,
I
you have a whole chapter on Benioff and Tim Cook. Chapter on Benioff and Tim Cook.
Although Benioff just did a bad thing to a reporter, so that wasn't very cool.
And interesting enough, Steve Jobs, who has a reputation of being a complete asshole, and you were kind of contouring
the book. Well, he's a complete asshole in a different way. It was about like product and stuff like that. I don't think he went around yelling at people and screaming at coffee baristas. I don't think that's what he was doing. He certainly wasn't treating anti-trans and anti-Semitic stuff. He certainly had no opinion on news of the day. Like, you know, he didn't pull a Bill Ackman. You could never see him doing that.
What is it that's so detestable about that guy?
Just everything. I don't know. I just want to like make money and win or lose.
Just shut up. We don't
go
just
to
shut
your
up.
Nice.
Don't try and be that you're a man of the people. You know, there's tremendous similarities to a guy like that. There really, really is stuff of this man of the people shit. It's so clearly opportunistic.
They're all the rich people doing it. Get the man. I'm like, you're the man. Like you're the man. You're the man. You're also the man. And sometimes I'm like, you know, you look like you have a smart hot wife. Just enjoy your life. You have a nice new baby.
Well, but the
like,
arc
calm
there,
the fuck down.
But the arc there is, if you're going to say that there are two big aspirational grabs, there's wealth and there's fame. And a guy like that, I got the wealth already because this is what happened to a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. Even if they weren't in it, that's what happened. You even talk about with Musk, that it just, that's what Twitter was all about, that there is an allure. You know, I'm a guy, I'm not the richest guy in the world. I have some notoriety and I'll walk into a restaurant with some of my hedge fund friends who can buy and sell me 10 times. Nobody pays attention to them. They don't give a shit. And so I think these guys realize there is something to be said for beyond just having my money in the bank.
Yeah. Honestly, I think they didn't get hugged enough as children. That's my take on all of them.
You talk about that. You said, it's interesting, if you could interview Trump, the first thing you'd start with is him as a child. Because
Tim,
obviously
as a
it
child,
all happened.
I want to know what happened there. I think he was like this, by the way. I'm not a therapist, but seems like this. Some people are baked in.
Yeah,
really bad people. It definitely something happened with his mom and his dad. It's so clear. I mean, again, it's not, you don't have to be a therapist to look at what happened to this guy.
Be interesting with Zuckerberg. You know, you talk about Zuckerberg. There was not even the pretension of cuddly, warm fuzziness that this guy was so clear that what he was out to do, what he was out. He wasn't even hiding behind a shield of, I'm here to help man and bring us all together.
He did. No, he did
say,
go down
he would
that
say
thing.
It. He would use the community word, but you saw through it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, one of the things I did like about him was that he was like all these, like they're sort of baby sharks and they pretend they wear fleece. And so they're still a shark. They're going to bite you. And he wasn't really a baby shark. He didn't like, I mean, he wore the clothes. He had the soft clothes and those flip flops that he liked. What are they called? Sliders?
The Adidas things.
The Adidas things. My son wears them. You know, he was that. He has that kind of pretension. But I think he actually wore those things. So I wasn't really particularly bothered by that. And he did do this kind of like, we're here for everybody. We'll all decide together. And then he was the only one in charge, which was kind of like, okay, then why don't I get a vote? Why don't I get some money from all the persistent information thievery you're doing, essentially? And so, you know, he was much more you could see the outlines of a lot of these entrepreneurs, which is highly aggressive, you know, victimized sometimes. I'm a victim.
Well, along that victim thing, and it's interesting, I had Sorkin's movie about Zuckerberg mm-hmm. in his book. You see he was rejected by a girl and that kind of drove
her. That didn't happen, though. Honestly,
it didn't happen that way. No. I was going to ask, with most of these guys, were they like, did they have their lunch money taken as kids and got rejected?
Not Mark.
By their,
Mark was very beloved by his parents. His parents are lovely. I like to meet people.
His sister's
parents.
A nice woman also. His sister, Randy's really nice.
You know, Randy's great. He has a lovely family, I have to say. And it looks like from
I'm talking
videos,
about more socially and
no, I think he
side.
Had his little crew of nerds and they were tough. Customers. I think they valued wherever they were. I think it was Chappaqua intelligence. I thought they valued people like Mark. I don't think he was. That's not my impression that he had a terrible childhood in any way. I think, though, he definitely just had a drive. A lot of people, he loved Caesar Augustus, you know, Augustus Caesar.
Somebody tells you in the book.
No, he said it himself. He said he talked about it extensively. But he was an aggressive young man on the up. You know, we went to Harvard. You could see that. You know, he was from a I think he went to the public school there, I believe, but it's a very good public, you know, it's a very high-achieving.
It was Mamaroneck, I think he was from.
Chappaqua.
Was Chappaqua?
Because his dad was the friendly dentist of Chappaqua. The card I have says that.
I love that.
He gave me his card. I'm the friendly dentist of Chappaqua. If you ever need anything, I was like, I'm good.
If you chip a tooth.
I don't have tooth issues in Chappaqua. Yeah. Which is a nice town for people that don't know above New York. It's a bedroom community, but really lovely. I think Hillary Clinton lives there.
Clinton lives there. Did you, is it fair to say the mission statement of the book is, okay, these are all the fuck ups we did with digital up until this point. Let's not do the same thing with AI, because you and I were talking before we were on the air that already your book is being plagiarized by AI. And that is that to me makes it seem like it's just a little appetizer what happened with the digital world and social media.
You see, we don't know how these things are going to play out. That just like when you first got the iPhone, I got it right away, and you couldn't have imagined Uber. It was 5 years coming. You couldn't have imagined how you use these things. You could guess on certain things, but I don't think anyone would have imagined the economy that grew up around it. Same thing here. You don't know how are people going to use these tools? But I'll tell you, I know two things for sure. Someone's going to make a lot of money and figure out some really interesting ways to change advertising or insurance or whatever, blank, fill in the blank, right? Whatever industry it affects, right? Surgery or
everything,
medicine.
Everything.
Drug discovery. You could just go through them. I just don't know what it'll be. And second, I am definitely sure shitty people will use these tools to fuck with us,
in
some fashion. And because they're good tools to do that, because they did it before, and these are even more powerful, supersized tools. It's the internet on steroids in a weird way. And for media, for sure, it's the implications are so clear of things it could do. And it's not just it's not just doing my book, a fake book of mine, and with an AI picture of me that looks.
Yeah, I mean that's
funny,
the easy stuff to see. Yeah, I mean that's.
Yeah,
that's
that was easy. But news stories. There was a tragic thing that happened, and I'm not going to go into it. But there were instant news stories about it that were generated by AI that were so factually inaccurate that was really something to see. And I'm like, wow, they're flooding the zone of news. What'll that do to news? What'll it do to people's reading? And it was super interesting to look at. So you're starting to see the outlines of the things it will do and what people will employ it to do. Voting, elections, you can
everything. Advertising.
Advertising. You guys don't know anything, and now you will, right? Yeah. You'll really know it works. So
that's
a
great line for advertising. You guys don't know anything.
Well, isn't that the famous thing about advertising, 2% of it works or 10% of it works. You just don't know which 10%.
Well, that's pretty much sums up the brain power in advertising. I want to go back to Zuckerberg. Mm-hmm. Does he feel, you're not a shrink.
No.
On any level responsible?
None.
So there's not like, I'm changing elections and the misinformation and what's happening to girls' self-images themselves. And there's it's not there. It doesn't exist.
No, he did that once when he got interviewed by a guy named David Kirkpatrick when there was some allegations of Russian interference on the platform. Now, look, it's a great platform. Why wouldn't they? That's what the Russians do. That's what the Chinese do. That's what white supremacists do. They look for an in, right? And he said, there's been no influence on the platform. And I called up one of the people at Facebook. I'm like, none? Where's he coming up with that number? I think he said 0.1114%. He made it up. There's no way he knew by that time. He'd have no idea how much mold is in the system. He just wouldn't. There's no way he could know. And then later they kind of backed it up and they said, well, we're not sure. I'm like, you don't know, do you? Because you haven't been monitoring this. And as it turned out, you know, they could, this platform could be easily gamed, and it would be easily gamed. And they pretended that it couldn't be, or it wasn't, and that they knew. And what I, you know, as you know from running companies, there's a lot of chaos inside companies, right? You just don't know. No. You know that. And one of the things that really hit home with me is I went to see Facebook Live when they show it to reporters before, and then you get to look at it and try it out, just like I'm trying out the Vision Pro or whatever. And I was sitting in the room with these people, and they showed it to me. It was cool. And they showed me, like, you know, cats, or, you know, here it's, you know, remember Chewbacca mom, that lady, you know, they're showing me stuff like that. And I said, can I ask you a question? What's your safety stuff in place for when someone shoots someone else on this thing, or when someone straps it onto his head and kills massacre? What happens when there's bullying? And what happens when there's, you know, I went through like a list of terrible things that could happen that I thought of just on the top of my head. And they were like, literally this geek looks at me and he says, I shouldn't say geek, this young man who seemed technical, looked at me and said,
seemed humanly challenged, seemed humanly but very challenged.
He looked at me and he said, you're a bummer. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a fucking bummer, dude. Yeah. Guess what? The world is you heard of the world? You heard of human beings? They're fucking bummers too. And the fact that they couldn't anticipate or put in safety right from the get-go, when that guy in New Zealand did that and broadcast it, I was like, you could have guessed it. Same thing with these Amazon things. You could have guessed it. I mean,
so a big theme in the book, obviously, is where was the regulation? How is this the first time in the history of the development and the capital in capitalism, in advancement of society, that there are just no guardrails as the new?
Yeah. How is that?
How is it? And what, just to get into the news today, drifting off a little from the book, is that how do we sit there and let TikTok exist? It just that we basically, you see what's happening even in the war now, and just how young people think Hamas is this lovely organization because of what they see in TikTok.
It's a lot of things. Let me just be clear. It's social media. TikTok just happens to be the most popular, but it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Let's be clear.
This is where people get their news from. And so, by the way, we all know, I'm going to say something so pedestrian, we all know NBC couldn't get on there and say whatever they feel like. And yet they are now a pimple on a pimple on a pimple on somebody's rear end compared to the reach.
That's correct.
So how did this happen? How did these guys, it's not a new trend
because media people didn't think they wanted to do media, and they don't do media. They just are media, right? They're just here. And they presented themselves. We're here to help you. You know, like, they're not here to help you. They're here to own the
make money.
When I saw Larry Page taping television or doing all those books, I knew just what he was up to. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, I'm helping people get access. I'll help publishers. Yeah. And he came back from a meeting with them. I happened to be with him in New York when he was doing it. And he goes, boy, they really didn't accept what I was doing. I'm like, why should they let you steal their shit? And he's like, I'm not stealing it. I'm helping them. I'm like, you're not helping them. You're putting it on your service and then you control it. It doesn't matter if it's theirs. Now it's yours because you're putting it on your service. And that's how people are going to get everything. And therefore, you are in the catbird seat once you get it up there. And why should they give you their copyright? You know, Universal just pulled off its songs from TikTok, right? Mm-hmm. Why are we helping them? Like, why are we helping them kill us, essentially? So then they went into the advertising business, which is, of course, where they made all their money. And they took it all. They took it all through all kinds of means, including monopoly position in technology. And for some reason, you know, years ago when they did that Facebook stuff, they were doing, Google and Facebook were trying to get media people on the platform. They came to me. They're like, well, put Recode or whatever I was doing at the time on platform. I go, no fucking way. Like, no way am I putting my stuff.
Yeah, you're not gonna,
and they wanted to give you money. And I was like, so you're buying your friends. Okay, that's interesting. And all these brands took that money and put it, and it didn't help them. They're all off of it now. It didn't work. The power differential goes to tech every single time, the distribution means. And so I was, you know, I think one of the things that media had to understand is, they're not here to help you. They're here to eat you. They're here to eat you. And that's been hard for media to understand for some reason. And that this is also entertainment. This is all, this is, and I think it's also the Hollywood companies, the entertainment companies. You know, when Disney had to get into streaming, so did the rest of them. But doing those deals with Netflix, I remember,
yeah,
and Jeff Bukas called them Latvians or whatever, Estonians, whatever he said, whatever. He gave them some name. The Latvian army is going to kill us. I was like, yes, the Latvian army is going to kill
us. And kill you quickly and swiftly.
I was like, you're giving them your stuff for what? For money? Like, you need to build your own stuff. So, you know.
I want to talk to you about Factor. If you want to eat healthy, eat conveniently, eat the right way, you want Factor. Look, this warmer weather is coming. You can meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like protein plus, keto, calorie smart. Factor Fresh's never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I've tried these things. They're fantastic. They really are. So no matter how busy you are, you always have time for a nutritious, great tasting meal. Got 35 different meals to choose from with 60 add-ons. You can hit your wellness goals with many dietitian-approved meals and ingredients that you can trust. Treat yourself to restaurant-quality meals and feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon. The blackened salmon is amazing. I highly recommend it. Keep your kitchen time to a minimum. Meals are ready in up to 2 minutes. So this is a great lifestyle choice. You can maximize your protein intake, minimize calories. Just keep you healthy, keep it easy. I'm telling you, you got to try Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Donnie50 and use the code Donnie50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code Donnie50 at factormeals.com/Donnie50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Factor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I asked you this question the last time you were gracious enough to be on the show. If I make you czar of social media tomorrow, and you get to now, you get to set up the playing field and make the rules and make the changes and no one can question the queen, what does that look like?
Well, you'd have privacy, very stringent privacy issues around what you do with data of people. I think you would limit the ability of players, anonymous players, to game the system. Like, you'd do as much as you can around safety and protecting consumers. I would throw people off. I'd run a newspaper. Like, guess what, Steve Bannon? You don't get to write a column for the Washington Post. Like, no, thank you. Do your own thing. And by the way, he does. He's very successful at his own little media operations. I would not hesitate, and I wouldn't hide behind the First Amendment for it, because
that's their fucking shield. The First Amendment,
It's not a shield. It doesn't apply to them. It applies to the government, right? Yeah. They free speech. But then Elon kicks off people he don't like. He does it all the time. He's suing a group of people who said he sucks, right? He doesn't like that. Why shouldn't they be able to say you suck, sir? He said he wants people to say he sucks, but no, he doesn't. He wants to sue them. So I would kick people off, no question. Just like I told Mark many years ago when I was interviewing them, and he switched the topic
from
Alex Jones.
Was this the sweat?
No,
interview?
No. The sweat one's. It was about privacy. That was the privacy sweat. This was about misinformation. And we were at his office where he felt nice and safe, but he wasn't, because he didn't have what it took to understand what was happening here. And so we were talking about Alex Jones. Alex Jones had done a heinous piece of shit and you know, attacked those poor parents of the kids that were killed at Sandy Hook, and he should burn in hell for it. And can't die soon enough, Alex Jones. You cannot die soon enough. And he was violating their rules all the time, and they never kicked him off. And so I asked him, I'm like, Mark, this guy, why do you have rules? Why don't you just stop pretending you have rules and kick him off? And he didn't. And then I said, and then he shifted it to Holocaust deniers. And I thought that was a mistake on his part. And But he decided, you know, and he said something like, as a Jew, I know they're terrible, but I think they need to speak. That was his little feint there. And then he said something that was really disturbing. He said, they don't mean to lie, essentially. If you listen to it, it's a version of that. And instead of like challenging him, I said, oh, I think they mean to lie. I think that's the job description of a Holocaust denier, but tell me about it. And then he spooled out his version of how they should be able to speak. And then when he was done, I wanted people to hear it, right? That he won't make the decisions. The community will make the decisions. And I said, you are running a toxic waste dump and you're letting this anti-Semitism course through the veins of our country. And you are the place where most people get news. You have a special responsibility to stop that. Like, because you know it to be untrue, right? You know it is. And it shouldn't be heard. It shouldn't be heard. Absolutely. Let's shove it back down in the sewer it belongs in, right? And he argued with me, went back and forth and back and forth. And he got into a lot of trouble for that interview because I think he was essentially being so ignorant or naive about these terrible people. And by the way, anti-Semitism isn't a new thing. It just got turbocharged.
Yeah.
Look, turbocharging anti-Semitism, just what we need in this world right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we went back and forth and then it published and he got in big trouble for saying it. And it, he, 2 years later, he took them off. It took him two years. Why do you think everyone's anti-Semitism is worse than ever? Guess what? Because 2 years, mold was growing. These people got emboldened. They put out more stuff. They started to normalize it. This is typical propaganda. If you don't think it's propaganda, like, I wish we didn't use the term misinformation.
You should say, what is it?
It's propaganda. It's white supremacy on steroids. And now they're out in the open. The Washington Post says democracy dies in darkness. No, it doesn't. It dies in the full light of day.
Full light, and we're
the
watching
full
it.
Light of day. Welcome. Hey, that's Trump. That's Trump, by the way.
We're going to get to that in a minute. I want to do a little, ask you about something that just hit me as I'm talking to you and I was thinking about the book and think about who you are and how you've been this kind of conscience, check and balance.
Trying.
To these men, these men in powerful positions with people against less powerful positions. As far as you as a child, you tragically lost your dad when you were five. You talked about you've had a very mean stepfather. Mm-hmm. Did any of that get born there that I'm not going to let these fuckers fuck with people? Am I digging too deep here?
No, I think probably, I don't know. I haven't had therapy myself, even though I say Elon should have it. I think that my dad dying gave me a sense of ephemerality of life and that life is random and unfair. You know, unfair. And so you have to sort of suck it up and keep going. I think that probably my brothers and I are highly functional. That's a typical of people whose parents die at a young age. They get very functional and it's a good thing and it's a good thing for the most part, but it wasn't done in a good way. And I don't think my stepfather affected me at all. He's just a jackass. Right.
Yeah.
Lots of people have bad parents and like, you know, I'm not Crimea River on that for me.
You have not been shrink because you really seem to be mentally
very well. A friend of mine who was in therapy quite a lot. They were doing like every day, whatever it's called, whatever the therapy is where you do it every day.
Right. Intensive therapy.
And they were like, I was like, what in the world do you have to talk about? I'm not that interested.
Well, I've run out of it. It's funny you say that. Woody Allen has a great joke. You know, I go to so much therapy, they're going to open up a salad bar for me.
Yeah.
I'm at the point where I just basically gossip with my therapist.
Yeah.
I got the whole drill. I get growing up. I get what I get. It's like, it's like the weekend review of nonsense. I just can't, I can't break up with them. I mean, it's just that simple.
Well, you have to.
Yeah,
I just don't have that much to say about myself. I kind of get it. I kind of get my problems. I'm pretty aware of it. I got the gay thing down pretty good. I feel good about it. And
the book really gets into when you were kind of closeted at Georgetown. And,
yeah, it was sucked. You know, it sucked.
It's a different.
But they said to me, "You're blocking," and I looked at them straight in the eye. I said, "It's working." So I don't know what to tell you. I like, okay, I'm happy. You seem unhappy. I'm pretty happy about my situation. So anyway,
so. Is your role going to be different now in your community? Because there is a love story part to it. It's a lot of loving.
I love tech.
Yeah. So it's this kind of goes back and forth between there's certain wet kisses in there and there's a lot of consternation. Mm-hmm. So does your role change in the business as a result of this book?
No, because I've been doing this, you know, as a beat reporter, I didn't have an opinion because you can't do that at the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post. You just say this happened today, AOL got this funding, whatever I was writing about. When I moved on to All Things D, I think I changed the way tech journalism at least was done with Walt Mossberg, because we had a point of view. We were tired of, you know, Christiane Amanpour talks about as truthful, not neutral.
Yeah, I saw that quote.
That was us. That was us for many years. And I think she articulated it really well. We were reported analysis. And so we would say what we thought about things. We'd report, break the news and say, okay, this is what it means. We did that a lot. And I've always done that. I've always taken up, I wrote a story, I wrote a lot of stories about gender issues in tech. And one of my leads, everyone's like, oh, you were never tough on him. I'm like, are you crazy? We did the Uber stuff. We did the Yahoo, all the Yahoo messes. We did early privacy stuff on Facebook and Google's taking over search and monopolies. And one of the, when Twitter was around, they had a board of 10 men of the same age, essentially white, male, straight. And my lead on the story, I went back and found it. It's like on the board of Twitter, which has three Peters and a Dick. There may be a problem here with diversity. Right. And there was Peter Chernin, Peter Fenton, I forget the other Peter, and then Dick Costolo. And I was making a penis joke to make fun of it. I wrote a story called The Men and No Women of Facebook Management. You know what I mean? So I've always sort of poked at them in this way on issues that are important to me, which includes, you know, diversity, because it's good for business, not just to virtue signal. Although, what's wrong with doing it because it's the right thing?
I early on, it's interesting. My old agency, eight of my ten, this is in the 90s, and were all women because I was a meritocracy and I thought they were better. I mean, I wasn't even trying to be a good guy. It's just I was like, best players win.
That's what I say. So, and like, do understand why they may be hindered, whether they just had a baby and things like that. Things change when you have children. And so I just was, I think I haven't changed. I've just gotten more Larry David about it. I'm like, no, I used to be slightly more polite. Now I'm like, what's with that? What's with that? I don't get it.
Is there a future mission for Kara Swisher as AI, keep him in check? I mean, is that where you're going to be focusing
going
forward?
I think it's the same thing. I think we're still in the same place where the world's most powerful people with the most money and leading the world's most valuable corporations, and they're all tech companies except for the Saudis, right? And that luxury guy who sells Gucci or whatever.
LVMH, right.
Yeah, right, that guy. He's in the top 10.
Bernard Arnault.
Yeah, he's up there. Maybe Buffett is, but if you look at the list of rich people, it's all tech people.
Yeah.
All tech people. The companies are all, it's NVIDIA, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook. They're all the most valuable companies in the world. And they are running AI now, all of it. Government's not involved. There's no regulation. It's going to be very hard for small companies to break through and best them, which is my favorite thing to watch, you know, the young eat its old. That's what I love about tech, when the young eats its old. That's great. That's like not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Otherwise, we're like China. Like, we're just top down. Like, we're not China. The reason why everything starts in this country is because small companies always constantly get innovated on, and they upend the giants. And that's a great thing.
That's,
and our government
helps us do
that.
That's who we are. That's who we are.
That's right. And the government helps you by leveling the playing field. And right now, the playing field is unaccountable people with immense power and the privatization of important things like AI, space. Like, look, Elon Musk is a smart space person, but he should not be running our foreign policy.
No.
I feel safe on that ground.
I think that's a fair point. The guy, it's interesting that I think of all of these guys whose brand, his personal brand is the strongest, and I happen to know my publicist is his publicist, believe it or not, is Jeff Bezos. Seems to always have, whether it's real or imagined, seems to have his head in the right place. And obviously he's the richest of all. And I mean, he seems to have, you know, doesn't seem to have lost his way as some of the other ones have.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. He was an adult when he started. I say this in the book, he was an adult. He was not like the Silicon Valley boys. He didn't grow up in it. He was already a successful person in investment at D. Shaw. He was such a math whiz, right? And, you know, he had a career and a wife and he had kids. They all didn't. Later they did. So he was already well on his way to adulthood. That said, he's a tough customer, right? He's a real tough customer. And so, you know, some of the stuff Amazon does is quite rapacious, right? You know, going in there and this, you know, it's the DNA of Jeff. That company is the DNA of Jeff, no matter how you slice it. That said, he doesn't, like, he weighs in every now and then. I think he's probably a lot more conservative than you think, but he doesn't have to, he's not doing an Eli. It's like Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban's a real capitalist and actually—
You've been good. You were very good to Mark Cuban.
Yeah, because he's not progressive, but he's just sensible. Like, I think Jeff is probably down sensible lane more.
Yeah.
He's done a nice job with the Post. Everyone makes fun of all his stuff with Lauren Sanchez. I think
God bless.
That's
why
what
not?
I said.
By the way, I happen to see a little video of him giving a tour in his garage in 1994 of the first office of Amazon.
I was probably there.
The nerdiest of the nerd of the nerd.
I went there.
How this guy, beyond the money, how he's transformed himself, he's like a cool dude now. Where the other ones you look at and you go, you guys are still nerds. Doesn't matter how much fucking money you have, you're still fucking nerds.
I agree.
This guy is like, no, you're not a nerd, man. Beyond being rich,
you're a
cool guy. I don't
care if people have midlife crises. He's doing it in style. That's fine. Look, I don't care. I don't really care. Like, again, that focus on his personal life, I'm like, I don't, look, she seems nice. She seems to like him.
They seem happy. God
bless.
They
seem happy. What do you want? This is a short life kind of thing. But I do think he could be more outspoken in terms of, you know, I think that of President Obama, like, stop vacationing and start getting into it, right? Like, stop. Like, I'm tired of the basketball playing. I'd like you. This is a serious time.
You might want to be out there, yeah.
You might want to be out there. And I wish Jeff was. I don't know what he'd say. I never knew his politics. I have to say, I suspect he's sort of center-right.
Right,
I would guess. Most
successful, decent business people I've met in my life are center right. I mean, that's where you live.
That's the canard of Silicon Valley.
And that's where
I do too. I think, well, center right or left, but
right in the middle.
In the middle. I think that the canard that Silicon Valley is liberal. I was like, years ago I said this and everyone piled on me. They're like, no, they're progressives. I'm like, they're really not.
No.
They're not. They're very selfish pricks. Like, honestly. So I don't see, I think they could care less about anything. I think they really are. Whatever's good for them in terms of money is what they like.
I go back to my Trump analogy. Speaking of Trump, before I let you go, we're going to go off topic a little bit, just because you're one of the smartest people I know. Handicap the election at this point. What's going to happen?
I don't think he's going to win. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I know everyone's not going to win. I've never seen Trump.
I don't think he's going to win either. Actually, I agree with you.
I've never seen a loser, such a loser, act like a winner and us pretend he's a winner.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's scared of him. I'm like, he keeps losing everywhere. Kansas.
I mean, that's what we say on Morning Joe every day. That he's a 7-year loser. Like, everything he does, he has lost 7 of the last 8 elections.
Turns to everything he touches.
I wish Biden was a little younger. That's fine.
It's just the
only thing that's scary. I'm talking now is handicapping the election. You know, I was looking at the two guys contrasted yesterday at the border, and forget the inane things that Trump was saying and Biden was saying everything right. Yet Biden, as he walked, looked feeble. And for some reason, that matters to fucking people. And it's like, as opposed to the job he's done.
Here's how I put it. Trump is that guy. Let's put them both in an old folks home, because they're both old, by the way. And we should have much younger leaders. And there's a lot of great ones around.
We got a lot of people on the bench,
A lot of people on the bench, on both sides, actually. And several of the Republicans that are good are leaving. Mike Gallagher, I think, is A-plus intellect. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but he's A-plus intellect. You have the guy who can't find his apartment at the senior living facility sometimes, but is fine. Like, he's fit and he's sort of like, where's my apartment?
Right.
That's Biden to me. Like, that guy. Trump is the guy in the cafeteria who's crazy as shit, but he's super vibrant.
Yeah.
And he's accusing everyone of stealing his Jell-O. That's who he is to me. I was like, the crazy guy with the Jell-O is really a problem, but the other guy is affable. He's actually in pretty good shape. He forgets things.
I'm going to quote you on that. This is wonderful, Kara Swisher. I am a fanboy. I'm a fanboy. Congratulations.
Jell-O, where's my Jell-O? You took my Jell-O.
He took my Jell-O, and she grabbed my ass. Kara Swisher, good luck. The book is going to sell. He is a fucking loser. He is the most detestable.
He's a fucking loser.
Detestable species of a human being. Isn't that amazing that we can bring to the highest officer of the land, other than a serial killer or a pedophile, the worst fucking form of humanity that you can possibly have? It's just incredible.
I can see it. It's the American way. It's the American way.
Kara, stay well, my love.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, kid. That was fun.